Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
National anthem of the former Soviet Union, the despotic Soviet state that enslaved millions and killed tens of millions in slave labor camps, all in the name of economic freedom and a different economic system. What many of you don't understand is that Marxism and Leninism, Trotskyism, all of the isms of the Soviet Union are not quite dead. In fact, they're quite alive. In fact, they are beyond crawling. In fact, they are beyond walking. In fact, they have been walking through our society for at least 50 years. Only right now, they have taken center stage. Today, we're going to play excerpts from a gentleman who went to college with old Barry, and he's going to talk about how Barry Obama was a Marxist in those days. Now, let me pause right here. Many of us have changed from our youth to our adulthood. I am one of them. I was once a liberal. I was never a Marxist, but I was a liberal. There's an old adage which says those who are not a Marxist at 20 have no heart, and those who are still a Marxist at 40 have no mind. Now, Obama is at the age of enlightenment. He's over the age of 40. We can only assume that his politics have changed, somewhat. But we really don't know how far they may have changed from his early enchantments with Karl Marx, Vladimir Lenin, and Leon Trotsky. You say, oh, come on, you're way off the mark here. He's just a guy who wants to, make things better for the poor. Here's a man who wants to feed the poor. He's a Robin Hood. Obama's the Robin Hood who was taking from the rich to give to the poor. That is the popular notion of Barry Obama. But if you actually analyze where the money has gone from your pockets, Obama has not taken from the rich to give to the poor. Obama has robbed from the middle to give to the rich. There is no such thing as money falling down to the bottom. Ask the millions who have lost their jobs or their houses. The money is not going down. It's all going up to the banks and the cronies who put them in power. Everybody knows that. Where do you think the stimulus funds have gone? Did you get any of them? Where'd the stimulus money go? To you? And now Obama's saying that the stimulus headed off a depression. No one believes that. If it did, where are the jobs? No, I disagree entirely. So we're going to talk about Marxism and such today on The Savage Nation, a topic that I introduced a few years ago before it was popularized by some others with blackboards and chalk, and that's good. As Lao Tzu said, it doesn't matter who gets credit for what you are saying as long as what you are saying gets through to the masses. So we'll keep talking today about Marxism, Leninism, Trotskyism, and where Obama fits on the spectrum of communism. You say, oh, come on, he's not a communist. That's right-wing rubbish. Well, you know what? If you want to argue with me, go ahead. If you want to prove me wrong after you've listened to some of the data I'm going to give you and some of the information I'm going to give you, go ahead. It's talk radio. I am not the U.S. government. I am simply a talk radio host with a fairly good education, with a fairly good capacity to transmit ideas to you. You have the right to call me at any time. I don't care what your station of life may be. As long as you have a cogent argument, you may get through Doug the call screener. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com is the website. 1-800-449-8255. The third most listened to radio show in the United States of America, incidentally, with approximately 10 million listeners a week, listeners like you. Now, let's begin at the beginning with me. I'm the commentator. I'm the narrator of my own life, my own destiny, and my own worldview. I am the son of an immigrant. My grandfather fled communism. My grandfather fled Marxism. My grandfather fled the Red Revolution. My grandfather came to New York right after 1917, to find a new life for himself in New York City. And he opened a little tailor shop of his own, and he died at 47 from a heart attack because he worked 7 days a week, smoked whatever, the stress, and he died. So believe me, I know what I'm talking about when I talk about the fact that I'm one of the most devout anti-communists in the United States of America today. I have been studying Marx. I have studied Engels. I've read Trotsky. I've read them all from the time I was 18 years old. I didn't read them because I worshipped them. I read them because I was a brilliant college student. Not very good at grades, but I was a brilliant student in the sense that I read whatever I wanted to read, and I read it in total detail. Have you read all of Freud? I have. Have you read, let's not go through what I've read. I've read an awful lot. So I'm familiar with this stuff. It's not like I learned it yesterday from Fox News with a guy with a blackboard who went to high school. Forgive me for telling you that education does count. It's like saying, you know, size matters when it comes to a bus. This morning, for example, I bicycled down to the mall. I bicycle every day, one way, blah, blah, blah. And there was a farmer's market at the mall. And once again, there were the grifters. I can call them liberals. I don't know what they were. I assume they were by their looks. The minute I saw them eating for free from the poorest of the poor at the farmer's market, I got angry. There you saw the poor people trying to make a living selling some homegrown fruits and vegetables from little truck farms or home-cooked pastries that they make in their house. And there were the little piggies going from stand to stand, eating the free samples with little teeny forks and smiling at the owners of these little stalls like little insects, pretending that they would buy either a cookie or a grape or an orange or an apple. I've seen this before, and I tried to ignore it. I tried not to engage in it, but I couldn't. Unfortunately, my anger swelled up, and I lost control of myself. Why? Well, there was this big fat slob of a woman in her late 70s, obviously from Brooklyn. Huge bosoms, a craw on her that could have devoured a school bus. She was knocking down as many freebies as she could from booth to booth. So I unfortunately collided with her when she was next to a tofu meatball booth. And here she's sticking one little fork, toothpick full of the meatball into her fat craw, one after the other, like she's at a bar mitzvah. So I said to the owner so she could hear, "Do you sell anything, or do you only have these people eating for nothing?" So Fatso ignores me. The owner says, "What? What?" "Oh," he says, "you've got to give samples in order for them to buy." I said, "Do any of them buy, or do they just eat for free?" I wanted to hear it. So Fatso stops eating like a big insect, and she drops the tofu meatball on her bosoms, and she says, "Ah, he must be from New York," she says with a big mocking "New York." I said, "Wherever I'm from, I pay for my food, unlike you." And on she goes. She opens up her craw and sticks in another tofu meatball into her mouth. And I walk away muttering to myself, saying, "Why do I get involved? All I know is that the poor feed off the poor." And it leads me back again to the administration we are struggling with. Here is a man, Obama, who is portrayed as a Robin Hood, taking from the rich to give to the poor. But no, he's not doing that. He is taking from the middle class to feed the rich. Don't you understand what's going on here? Don't you see the game? The two-card Monty that's been played? Now, many of you in the Tea Party movements understand what's happened to you. You want smaller government. We understand that. You want less spending. We understand that. I mean, these are basic principles of conservative economics. We heard it all before. We've heard it under Ronald Reagan, and it worked. It did work. And I believe that the elections in New Jersey, Virginia, and, of course, Massachusetts have sent the tsunami shock right to Washington. They're all getting it. They all understand that something is going on in the land that they can't control. This is out of control. They don't have the control over you through the midstream media that they once had. Tom Brokaw is gone. Walter Crankenhaus is gone. They're all gone. You've got the internet. You've got talk radio. You've got each other. You've got your town halls. You've got your meetings. And you're communicating with each other. And the government is now facing a dilemma. They like to portray themselves as interested in preserving civil liberties. That's a big, big, important issue to liberals. Civil liberties, especially for Arabs and Muslims at airport checkpoints. But not for little boys 4 years old who have leg braces on because they can't walk. You see, the TSA will strip the leg braces off a boy who is 4 years old and make his parents cry and make him practically crawl through the TSA checkpoint while giving an Arab or a Muslim with a full burqa a pass for fear of offending the Muslim pressure groups. Apparently, there are not enough pressure groups for little innocent children who have leg braces on their legs, but we'll get back to that another time. But I want to play for you, before we go into a discussion of any of these points and debate with you these topics. And I want to begin with key excerpts from Dr. John C. Drew, who went to college with Barry Obama, who says he was a Marxist. And the source of this is Steve Maltzberg from WOR Radio on Breitbart TV. Let's listen to clip one.
Well, my most vivid memory is how insistent he was in arguing a Marxist-Leninist point of view. He made a very principled, dedicated, impassioned argument that, in fact, a real revolution was coming, and that, in a sense, we should all get on board and prepare ourselves physically and emotionally for that revolution.
All right. That's nothing unusual, in a sense, for a college. I went to college. I went to graduate school. In fact, I went to two or three graduate schools. I'm very aware of the college mindset. I understand it's mainly left-wing. We know that. You're not going to change that. It's the way it is. I mean, even an undergraduate school in the late 1950s in Queens College where I went, it was suffused. It was infused with European socialists and communists, which is amazing to me. Many of these professors had fled tyranny and came to America and then taught tyranny to the children. I never understood that. They fled tyrannical governments and they came here and became little mini tyrants themselves, trying to impose the very same systems that they ran from. It's amazing to me, but I've been through all of it, and I survived all of it, and I overcame all of it, and I became who I am a long time ago, and I haven't changed from that point of view. So we can talk about the revolution that is going on in America and the counter-revolution that is going on amongst Americans. I'll be right back right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Okay, so there's a real counter-revolution going on against the communist Marxist revolution coming out of the Obama administration. You say, well, come on, how can you say that? How many times do I have to say the same thing to you? Any European with any reasonable political knowledge knows that he is a socialist. Only the naive American voter, oh, how could he be a socialist? He doesn't wear a red beret. He's not marching under a Lenin banner. Don't be silly. He's just a nice man with a nice water spaniel and a nice wife and two children trying to do the best for the country. Oh, don't be silly. He's no socialist. John McCain even said he wasn't that nice man. And don't pay any attention to his middle name, Hussein. You don't want to be seen as a racist, do you? We've heard it all before. The only question I raised was, even during the campaign, was what variety of socialist is he? We still don't know. We don't really know, but we know it's something within the long 30-odd types in the spectrum. We don't know where it falls, and we don't know where it's going to end. You have to see the kind of people he is surrounding himself with. So let's focus again for the minute. I'm making it up. How about all the czars that he's appointed? Those are not my words. Those are his words. The car czar, the money czar, the green czar, the, you know, this czar, that czar, the snow czar, the climate czar. What do you mean czar? This is unbelievable. These are unconstitutional appointments. These are people with extraordinary powers over our life, all of whom worship either Mao Zedong or Marx or Lenin by their own admission, by their own publications, by their own writings, by their own speeches, and they're sitting in the center of power in Washington, D.C. under Obama. Why did he pick them? Did he pick any patriots? Did he pick any people who support Washington or Jefferson? Did he pick any people as a czar who might respect the other side of the spectrum? Not one. All of them are outright Marxists. Two of them are gone now. Van Jones thrown out because he was exposed for what he is. Anita Dunn thrown out because she compared, she actually said she worshipped Mao Zedong equal to Mother Teresa. That was the end of her. But this would indicate to you who the man is who he's picking for his czars, right? It should, unless you're Tom Brokaw, unless you work for ABC News, you should understand the danger we are in. Now, so there's been a counter-revolution. The people have said enough is enough. Throw the bums out. And they threw them out. Virginia, New Jersey, Massachusetts. And now they're in a state of shock. So what are they doing as a result? They're taking the cheeseburger eater himself, Bill Clinton. It's up on michaelsavage.com, link from Big Government. And it says Bill Clinton is plotting a Tea Party counterattack. Bill Clinton, the cheeseburger man, is going to work with a group to identify 7 to 8 national figures active in the Tea Party movement and engage in deep opposition research on them. In other words, they're going to smear them. The way I have been smeared for 15 straight years, I have been banned in Britain because of the smear campaign, because of the Soros-funded group that took sound bites I made out of context and sent them to vermin in England, socialist rats in England who are losing their own country to the invasion from Pakistan and elsewhere. Britain has lost its own identity. Britain flooded itself with illegal aliens in order to change the demographics of England exactly the way Bill Clinton did it here in America, and the exact same way, by the way, that George Bush did. Make no mistake about it. Bush was no conservative. You were hoodwinked by that one, my friends. But I was the only one in the media on a conservative side telling you that. I tried, but you kept criticizing me. When I called George Bush a fiscal socialist a year before the end of his administration, many of you stopped listening to me. You got mad at me. I called him a fiscal socialist because I understand business and money. And I understood what he was doing was unsupportable. He was building a bigger government. He was expanding the federal government. He was borrowing like crazy. And I knew that this all had to come to a crashing end. And, of course, the rest is history. Let's not go into the Bush to the Obama with the McCain and the Hank Paulson stuttering job. Let's not do that right now. I've done it before. So here we are. Now let's go on in the next few seconds. Start firing the next soundbite clip, too.
He definitely saw America as the enemy. He believed that the ruling elite had rigged our economic system so that it caused people to be poor. And
okay,
it,
you're
it
listening
immoral.
To Dr. John Drew talking about how then Barry Obama was a Marxist.
Savage.
There must be some kind of way out of here. Say the Joker to the thief. There's too much confusion.
Welcome back to the monarch of the Savage Nation, Michael Savage. I am the monarch, according to... Well, let's hear Jimmy for a minute. I love this song. He's in the 60s. Who wasn't a hippie in the 60s? The only one who was not a hippie in the 60s was George Bush. So he didn't even know that he's straight into left-wingism. If George Bush had been a hippie in the 60s, he probably would have been a better president. He never would have wandered into the left wing that he found himself in the last 3 years. So here we are. I mean, I was in Kula, Maui when Jimmy was there. Great onions. We shared onions together. Kula. The Silver Sword Inn, Kula, Maui. Great place. Unbelievable. So here we are. Michael Savage, best kept secret of Michael's of 2009 is Michael Savage and his band from Britain, according to Gina Miller and the Dakota Voice. And I'll read that article in a minute. It just came out. But let's take the calls because someone wants to support socialism. That's fair. Fair enough. James in New York. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please. You're up and you have the floor of millions.
Yes. Let's take a look at how bad socialism is in Western Europe. All Western European countries have got far more socialism than we had in this country. Therefore, they should be very, very miserable, as a matter of fact.
Oh, but you see, you're making a mistake in your thinking, sir. You're comparing apples with oranges. Do they have the same problem with illegal aliens from Mexico that we have, for example, in Germany? Do they have the same proportion of illegal aliens sponging off the system in France that we have in America? Of course they don't. So your comparison is null and void from the beginning.
It's not null and void from the beginning. I have to compare something. I have to come up with something.
So compare America to the ex-Soviet Union, a real socialist system.
They have a problem with illegal immigrants in France and in Germany.
Not to the same percentage as there are in America. We have the largest number of immigrants in the world in this country. And so when you say socialism works, you're drawing a comparison that is not apt because the social structure is different than America, number one, as I pointed out. But number two, the income situation is not the same. And number three, they're all going bankrupt, incidentally, James. France is going bankrupt. Germany is going bankrupt. They're not supportable economies. You know that by now.
Well, if they're going bankrupt, we are bankrupt already because our debt is far more than anything in Europe. So you don't know.
So you've just made my argument. Our debt is far greater than that in Europe, primarily because we have greedy people at the top. They're not classical capitalists. The Wall Street bankers who bankrupted this country are not classic capitalists. They are pirates. They're much like the robber barons of the turn of the 19th century, the robber barons who were reined in by Teddy Roosevelt. So I understand excess, my friend, excess from the left, excess from the right. I'm not saying all of a sudden that anybody could do anything in a society like this and we can all profit from it. Don't get me wrong. I've said over and over again, how do you explain, and if you listen to the show, James, how do you explain that one Treasury secretary after another all came from the same investment bank, Goldman Sachs? How is that possible?
It's possible because it was done. So what? Now, let's take the crime situation. The United States has got more people in jail than any other country in the world. We have 2,300,000 people in jail, by far the most per capita of any country in the world. The second largest...
Well, hold it. Let's stop there again. Do you know what percentage of these felons in jail are illegal aliens? You know what percentage of that prison population consists of illegal aliens?
Not many.
It's one-third, 33%. One out of three prisoners in America are illegal aliens. You see, you're living in the past, James. You don't have your facts. Look, I do this for a living. And if I were wrong, I wouldn't say it because I'd be caught to be wrong. Check it out, James. One out of three prisoners is an illegal alien who did not come here to work, did not come here to pick grapes, did not come here to clean a house. They came here to rob, to steal, to mutilate, to rape, to counterfeit, to sell drugs. That's why they're in prison. You ask anybody in the prison system, look it up. It's a piece of data, James. They're not all coming here to work. Did you read the story over the weekend from the LA Times about the distribution of black tar heroin in white suburbs by these most impoverished people from Mexico? They're distributing it in little balloons for $5 a piece like a six-pack of beer. It's a new epidemic. Don't be confused here, James. We have big problems in this country, and socialism is not the cure.
You know, how many people China's got in prison?
Well, so let me ask you something. Are you suggesting that China has a better society than we do? James, what happened? Oh, it's a time for depends change. Okay, thank you. So I understood. He was on a little longer than his wife let him, and that was... No, I know what was going on. He was an older guy, and he was an old, probably ILGWU type, a lifetime socialist, hanging on to his belief system. I understand it, but he didn't have the facts. And the fact is that he was silent for a long while, and someone said to him, tell him that in China they have less prisoners, and he did. And I said, do you suggest that China is a better society than here? And he hung up because, the depends at that point were completely saturated, and it was time to move on. All right. So let's now go back to the legitimate callers who know a little bit more about the modern status we are in. We will go back to the socialist-in-chief, as told to us by Dr. John Drew, who knew Barack Obama when he was in college, and he said he was a Marxist. Listen to clip three.
My sense of him is that he was a pure Marxist socialist, and I didn't see him thinking in terms of race. And so I just think that's surprising, you know, given what he wrote in Dreams of My Father. I saw no evidence of that.
Mm-hmm. Next, please.
What's crucial, I think, for me to get across, though, is that Barack Obama was part of a larger cultural system. I actually established the Marxist Student Association at Oxy in 1976. For my girlfriend at the time to tell me that Barack Obama was one of us was highly significant.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One of us. Now, here comes the punchline of all of these sound excerpts from this Dr. Drew, who went to school with Barry. I want you to listen to clip five and remember it carefully.
There was a sense that the Soviet Union was a more advanced society, and even though it had made mistakes under Stalin, there was still greater equality over there, and it was a better model for us than what we saw with our existing U.S. government. I'd go to my grave saying that he was arguing Marxist-Leninism.
Oh, no, I believe that.
All right, so let's go back to the Soviet Union for a moment. I'm going to give you one example of what nationalization did in the Soviet Union so that you get a snapshot. And you don't have to have a degree in political science to understand this. Joseph Stalin, dictator. Well, when he first came to power, the farms in the Soviet Union were individually owned by small farmers. They had small farms. Small family farms were producing the crops of the Soviet Union. And they were quite productive, and the people were eating fairly well. They were called kulaks. They were individual landowners. Joseph Stalin said, we can do it better with a centralized plan. We can eliminate the profit motive of these greedy farmers. We are going to nationalize all the farms in the Soviet Union. We're going to collectivize them, he called it. And we're going to make this one giant collectivist agricultural system, which will be more efficient, centrally planned by these brilliant bureaucrats in Moscow and the Politburo. And he did that. He stole the land from the kulaks. He arrested many of them. He killed many of them in slave labor camps, ordinary men and women like you or people you know. He killed them, mutilated them, and the government ran all of the farms in the Soviet Union. In the 1930s, this led to the disaster of 30 million Soviets starving to death because the government's efficiencies turned out to be a fiction, just as the government takeover of any industry in virtually any country has turned out to be a fiction. In fact, I would like to go into that another day. If you look at government-run industries around the world, very few of them are actually profitable. Let's look at Airbus. Airbus is run by a joint consortium of France and Germany and several other European Union countries, the last I checked. And so far as I know, they're still losing money because the governments support them with subsidies, keeping pumping money into Airbus. And they compete with our genuinely wonderful capitalist Boeing company, which has no such benefits as government subsidies. They just produce a better airplane for a lower price. So I'm giving you a lot of information all in a short period of time. I realize that it's, you know, mid-February and you have a lot to do in your mind. But the purpose of today's exercise in the Savage Nation is to point out not only why there is a growing revolution in this country from the center. You know, they say it's the New York Times declares the Tea Party movement and such a right-wing revolution. They're wrong. They're 100% wrong. It is a middle-class revolution that is going on. But because the New York Times is so far to the Soviet left, and has been since the 1930s, by the way, all you got to do is look up Mr. Durante of the New York Times in the 1930s to know what I'm talking about. They are so Sovietized at the New York Times that they would consider the middle class of America the right wing, just as the media does, just as Obama does, just as the Democrat Party does, just as 80% of the Republican politicians do. They consider the middle class to be right wing. Well, let me tell you something. I disagree with them. This movement that's growing in America is the middle class. It's the center right. Every poll that's been conducted in the last 6 months says that most Americans identify as somewhat conservative, not somewhat liberal. We are being ruled by an extremist band of the Democrat Party that does not even represent the Democrat Party. It does not represent the mainstream of the Democrat voter. It represents a small fringe group of the far left. And I don't have to delineate them for you. You know who they are. If you've gone to college, you know who they are. If you've gone to a psychiatrist, you know who they are. If you've, you see what I mean? Just go down the list. Any shrink who says your four-year-old who's acting like a boy should be given Ritalin and be given behavioral therapy is a classic manipulator of the mind coming right out of the Marxist-Leninist school, using the pharmaceutical industry as his tool of manipulating the little boys of our society, another big problem I've worked on for 25 years. But I don't want to get distracted right now from the big, big story. The big story is what we're talking about. Let's go now to clip six on the Savage Nation.
The reason I think he's a Marxist is because I saw it with my own eyes. And I think he needs to explain to the American people what were the logical steps he took to get out of that Marxist socialist perspective.
Okay, now that's the big question today on the Savage Nation. And really is the only fair question of the day. Just because Jesse Jackson allegedly spit into the salads of white people when he was young does not mean that he continues to spit in the salads of white people now. I'm sure he doesn't. He's made a lot of money not spitting in salads. Instead, he goes and threatens people and shakes them down, in my opinion. So therefore, he doesn't have to spit in salads anymore. People grow up and they change their politics. Just because Al, the Reverend Al Sharpton, was engaged in the Freddy's Fashion Market fire, which killed seven people, the Tawana Brawley incident where he accused Detective Pagonis of smearing a black woman with feces after raping her, it turned out to be a fake call. That doesn't stop him from appearing on O'Reilly's show and dining with O'Reilly up in fancy restaurants. He's grown up. He doesn't need to do that anymore. What does he need a bullhorn for when he has Fox News? So people do change. I recognize that, and I'll be right back.
Savage.
Say you want a revolution. Well, you know, we all want to change the world. You tell me that it's evolution. Well, you know.
It is 52 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the one and only Savage Nation.
But when you talk about destruction.
Okay, very good, guys.
Don't you know that terrific. You can count me
up. All right, terrific. Excellent. Now, the thing that brought the Obama administration to its heels was the attempt to take over the healthcare industry, which was really an attempt to seize the insurance industry. It went from healthcare reform, remember? What Nancy Lugosi was doing. Remember Lugosi, what she was doing for months? Nancy, she killed it. The face of the healthcare revolution, the attempt to steal the entire insurance industry right out from under your eyes, was first, if you remember, championed by none other than Bonnie Frank
had built a lot. He was full of himself for a long while. He was so on top of it. I mean, because it's the days of war. And we're on top of it all. Now, we don't have time for the little people. We got it all.
Notice he disappeared. They stopped using him.
For Rahm and for me and for many others, these are the days of war. They are the days of war,
A-W-E. All right, fine. So they threw him out because he started to become the face of the healthcare scam and people didn't buy it. Then they brought her up. The pole vault thing was the... Where is she since the pole vault clip? Listen to this.
We go through the gate. The gate's closed. We'll go over the fence. The fence is too high. We'll pole vault in. If that doesn't work, we'll parachute in. But we're going to get healthcare reform passed for the American people, for their own personal health and economic security. And
okay, after this, they gave her the hook. Lugosi was sent on a trip to Taiwan to buy machine parts for Dianne Feinstein's shopping cart business. So I don't know where she is, but that was the last you heard of her. If she had had as much passion for defeating Al-Qaeda, I think the Democrats' approval ratings would have gone up by 30%. A passion for taking over the insurance industry like I've never seen before. But if you actually looked at what happened, the middle class woke up. Do you know that your premium would likely be raised by 10 to 13% more than if the bill did not become law? Did you know that a family of four eligible for a subsidy would also get beaten under this plan? If you look at the CBO estimates, not the Michael Savage estimates of what you will pay, a family of four with a household income of $54,000 a year, that's not rich, by the way, would be expected to pay 17% of their income for health insurance premiums, co-pays, and deductibles after getting the subsidy. 17% of the income of these people making $54,000 a year would go to pay for this government insurance plan. That would amount to $9,000 a year. Now, what if you have a so-called Cadillac plan that you get through your employment right now? Would you do well? Would you do better? Would you do worse? The top 20% or so of health plans that are now enjoyed by millions of Americans will be taxed at 40%. 40%. They're putting an excise tax, a sin tax, into the Senate bill. They're saying it's a sin to provide a generous health plan for your family. That's what Pelosi wants. That's what Emmanuel wants. That's what Barack Obama wants. And that's why they hit a stone wall. And that's why they lost in Massachusetts. Now, I want to go back to Massachusetts for one moment. We know it was a tsunami that washed over the White House, what happened with Mr. Brown. We know that. But what you don't know is what you heard on the Savage Nation or may have missed on the Savage Nation the day after that election. I had a very well-known writer from Boston who has lived there all of his life. And he said, Michael, what people don't know is the reason this literally unknown Republican won, Brown, is one of the main reasons was is because we already have the health care plan in Massachusetts put in by Romney, by the way, that Obama wants to put in. It's almost identical to Romney's plan, incidentally. You don't know this. It's a secondary story. And what happened was that everyone said, good, let's take the state-sponsored health plan. What happened was is the premiums went through the ceiling, the service went down, and most importantly, we learned, the people were very angry to have learned that illegal aliens, all of those folks from Mexico, Guatemala, Nicaragua, El Salvador, all the illegal aliens who were sponging off the state of Massachusetts are now enjoying free health care courtesy of the state of Massachusetts health care plan. And that's what was talked about at the town halls in Massachusetts that led to the upset victory of Mr. Brown. Did I make that up? No, it came from Don Fetter, formerly syndicated columnist, a man who knows what he's talking about, has lived in the area for his entire life. Now, you got to remember, you're not going to read this in the local paper because they don't want you to know it. I don't even know if they know this. They don't hear the things they don't want to hear. I hear the things that we have to hear in order to save this good republic. So I've given you a lot to think about, and I'm not going to throw more at you. Right now, I'm in a phase of my talking where I have, if anything, too much information. I don't want to overload you. This is primarily AM radio, which is primarily an entertainment medium. Let's never forget that radio is primarily an entertainment medium, that people like me came across the airwaves by accident with high educations, with a background as a writer. Change the landscape of AM radio doesn't mean that you want to take information down day and night. So I won't burden you with any more information. I've given you all I want to give you. In the next hour or two, we're going to sail along on the Savage Nation talking about Obama, Marxism, Leninism, Trotskyism, and the other isms that can't do it, the isms that couldn't, the isms that have stalled. The trains have come off the tracks. They are stalled somewhere in the Caucasus.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Here they come, brawny, strong, just a list of them, a laundry list of great things about this group.
The lunch bucket dogs.
They're making me hungry.
Most of them are big and powerful. Most of them are bred to be working dogs, whether it's pull a cart or a sled or guard the homes.
It's the Savage Nation. We're talking about all of us working dogs out there being exploited by all of the non-working dogs. As you know, I'm a big dog lover, and I really enjoy watching the Westminster Kennel Show over the last few nights. Dog show, whatever. Fantastic. Fantastic to watch the dogs. And it forced me to understand something all over again, that man is the only animal that has non-working animals amongst them. I don't know of any other species that has non-working animals in their within their groups. I don't know of any such thing. You say, well, that's what distinguishes us from animals, is that we should take care of our most vulnerable citizens. Oh, have I heard that so often from the commies on the left in this country. Our most vulnerable citizens. Who might those be? Who might our most vulnerable citizens be? Could they be the returning veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan? They're very vulnerable. Could they be the anti-abortionists who spend their own time and their own money to speak on behalf of the unborn? Could the most vulnerable citizens in America be the believing Christians and the believing Jews? Could the most vulnerable citizens in America be those of us who are on the outside, the dissenters? Could we be the most vulnerable? Sure, we could be, and we are, but we're not the most vulnerable citizens to the radical leftists who are trying to transform the society into something that we have not seen since the Soviet Union. The most vulnerable citizens, yes, I've heard it all before. And so we've been talking about Marxism, Leninism, socialism, and where on that spectrum of such Barry Obama fits. Because there's no question about it. Any European knows he is a socialist. It's not a mystery, and they're proud of it. They would say, so what's the mystery? He's a socialist, so what? It's just you dumb Americans don't know that he is because you've never studied it. You think, Democrat, Republican. You know, Democrat, Republican. Democrats are for the little guy. Republicans are for the big guy. What you don't know is the Democrats will range all the way from the far left, like Obama, the socialist Democrat left, to the conservative Democrat, the so-called blue dogs. And some of them are going to change their tunes real quick in 2010. Oh, yeah, they're changing it already, going back to their, you know, their roots, their centrist roots, because they're about to be thrown back into the silos that they came from. Now, I want to talk about that, but first I want to draw back a little bit, take a deep breath. Take it with me. When I was a little boy in the United States of America, the son of immigrants, my mother would proudly tell me that the difference between America and Europe at that time was that we had a giant middle class, a spectrum, of course, of people in the middle class, from lower, middle, and upper middle class. But nevertheless, there was a gigantic middle class in America that distinguished this nation from Europe after World War II. I don't have to take you back into ancient history to know that at one time there were serfs and landowners, the princes and the serfs. That was all ended somewhere in the middle 1500s, I believe, when people were permitted to own their own land. And that was the end of the serfdom. That was a great step forward for humankind when people could own their own piece of land. So we have, through America, seen the growth of a tremendous middle class where most people own their own properties, their own houses, their own apartments, their own condos, whatever. That's a good thing. That's what makes us unique and great, different from any other society on earth. Until very recently, when something changed, a dramatic shift occurred in this bell curve, the rich, the middle, and the poor. The bell curve, looking at it as though it's strictly a bell, with a big middle, big fat middle, big bell, big fat middle bell, big fat middle on the bell, middle class. Suddenly that shrunk. It shrunk. Honey, I shrunk the kids. And the big middle started to disappear, diminish. Millions of people lost their jobs, lost their houses, lost their families. That's what this so-called revolution is going on, that's going on in this country. That's where it's coming from. So now let me ask you something. Certainly Obama didn't start this. Bush did. But I called Bush a fiscal socialist, as I tell you, over 2 years ago. I was on to that fact that the Republicans were all part of the same conspiracy, albeit in a different track. I know about the Bilderbergs. I know about all of that stuff. But at the risk of your displeasure, those of you on the right, I'm not going to go into the Bilderbergs. I'm not going to go into the CFR. I'm fully aware of their interconnections to the banks on Wall Street and the governments that we have in the Senate and the Federal Reserve. Believe me, I could talk chapter and verse, but I choose not to at this time. I want to stick to the bell curve. So, America was distinguished by the big, big middle. Are you bored yet? If you are, I can move on. And we can talk about lingerie in Saudi Arabia. I mean, whatever you want to do, I'll go with you. I hear that they're banning lingerie in Saudi Arabia. Take a look at the women over there. You know why. I don't know. No wonder the women don't want lingerie in Saudi Arabia. Most of the men are in Paris picking. Okay, let's stop right there, but I don't want to get distracted. Okay, so the middle class starts to disappear, and there's actually a growth curve in the rich. There's a growth curve in the rich and a growth curve in the poor, and the middle class is shrinking. So we're becoming a two-class society, moving towards becoming a two-class society rather than a three-class society. You see what I'm getting at? And where did we last see the two-class society? Well, many places, but most typically in the Marxist socialist states, where there is clearly a two-class society. What you don't know is that these workers' paradises have a two-class society. You have the bureaucrats who work for the government, who live fairly well. They get the food, They have the dachas. They had the private houses out in the country. They had government cars and chauffeurs. And the other people lived on the, you know, fighting for the one salami hanging in the butcher shop that I keep talking about, because the agrarian revolution didn't work when it was run by the government. Now, of course, that's all changed. I recognize that. The Soviet Union is a hybrid in some ways. They have very little, in many ways, social freedoms are very diminished. But economically, they're in some ways more conservative, fiscally more conservative than we are. It's hard to believe, isn't it? But the Soviet Union is probably more fiscally conservative than the United States of America is right now. But it goes back to what I told you years ago in The Savage Nation. I was a big reader as a youngster, and one of the people I read everything he wrote was Aldous Huxley, Brave New World, you know about it. Huxley wrote in 1950 that in the future, he said, as the Soviet becomes more like, excuse me, in 1950 he wrote that as America and the Soviet Union interact, the Soviet Union would become more like America, and America would become more like the Soviet Union. Enter stage left, Barack Obama. I'll be right back.
Savage.
You know, it's interesting that dogs work. They're working dogs. You watch a show on nature. I love nature shows. Science Channel, they showed 6,000 feet below the sea creatures that I never knew existed. Every one of the creatures below the sea has adapted over the eons to some form of capacity to hunt for its food, to hide from the predators that want to eat it. Every single creature in the ocean is either prey or predator to one species or another of another kind of sea organism. And the point of the story is that every animal on Earth works to both protect itself and find its own food, except man. Man may be the only animal on Earth that relies upon others to feed it and gives others nothing in return. And that's why we are resentful of a government that seems to be more concerned about the freeloaders than about those of us who provide the income for the freeloaders. You think this is all hot air and rhetoric? You are mistaken, my friend. Do you know that over 60% of Americans receive more benefits than they pay in taxes? That means 40% of us support 60% more of us. That means that it's an insupportable structure. Did you hear what I just said? Why on earth should we support able-bodied people? Why should we educate and provide medical care for illegal aliens and their children? Why should prisoners be given such glorious treatment in prisons where it costs $50,000, $60,000 or more a year to give them everything under the sun? Special religious meals and books. I didn't say turn it into a devil's island, but I would say something is wrong with a country that is so led by the liberal left that we are bled until there's nothing left in us to give. And I learned from nature. I'm still working at my age. I could have retired a couple of years ago. There were times I couldn't have, but there are times that I could. Why do I keep working? At this point, it's in my blood. It's in my blood. That's all there is to it. I was raised to work. I was thinking about this the other night to tell you this on the radio. What do you mean I was raised to work? Someone beat me with a hose? No. What do you mean I was raised to work? I'll tell you exactly how, in case you want to know how to raise your children. I thought about it the other day. As I get older, I start thinking back on my childhood a lot. My mother and father, if they were to talk about someone in the neighborhood, in the building, and we grew up in the Bronx, they would say, oh, he's a hard worker. They would say it with almost a whisper looking up to him. Didn't matter what he did. They said, Joe is a painter, but he's a hardworking man. In other words, they said it with respect, the way they said it. So I learned that they respected people who worked hard. That was an important thing in my development, I realized, looking back. In other words, they weren't doing it for me. They didn't say, oh, let's show young Michael how to grow up and who to become. They respected people who worked hard. And they had no respect. They had just contempt for leeches. I don't think they knew any. There was not a person in the building who didn't work hard. Everybody worked. Everybody raised the family. The children were clean. They were all well fed. They were all poor, but nobody knew they were poor. The apartments were clean. And long after we were left the neighborhood, another generation moved in from a different country of origin, and they were a little different. They burnt they were on welfare, and they burnt their mattresses and threw them out of the window into the streets if they didn't get fed. you know, sort of like you'd see at a zoo on a Monday. And you wonder why there's anger in this country? How did this happen? How did a whole nation of hardworking people get taken over by a nation of leeches? And a government that caters to the leeches, not the people who give them the money to give to the leeches. How does this happen? It's unnatural. It's insane. So you want to know what the Tea Party movement is about? You want to know what conservative talk radio has been about? You want to know what my best-selling books have been about? You want to know what the town hall meetings have been about? You want to know why the politicians and the reporters look like deer, you know, in the so-called searchlight? Because they saw real people really angry with real knowledge of what the hell is going on. They know that they've been had and they don't want it anymore. They're not going to take it.
Savage.
Yeah, all of us working dogs are finally standing up at Animal Farm and saying to the piggies in the barnyard, it's up, Buster. Get out of your striped trousers. It's over. You're not living off our work anymore. So that's really the core of it all, and I thought I would share that with you today on the Savage Nation. You got Piggies by the Beatles? Play it. What the heck? Play
it.
This song is dedicated to K Street. This goes out to all the folks on K Street. Not funny. Turn it off. That's all. The bubble passed. It's like the sex bubble. Once it passes, the sex bubble passes, you can't do it. It's the same thing with the joke bubble. If the joke bubble, it's burst, it's over. It's no joke. It's an ear. You need an ear for these kind of things. So that wasn't funny. We killed it. That's all. So here we are. We're sitting here in the midst of it all. It's the best of times. It was the worst of times. Charles Dickens. Remember that? It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. I mean, what times are? We're sitting here talking with each other. The government doesn't know what to do to finagle the insurance industry out of your hands, how to pull the global warming scam over your eyes anymore because it's all been exposed for the fraud it is. Everybody knows it imploded with ClimateGate, and the government's the only ones who thinks that you still don't know it because ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, and New York Times won't report it. So they figured that you don't know it, but you do know it. Tea Party organizer wins New York Assembly race. That just came up. Second Tea Party convention planned for Vegas. Dean Murray, a 45-year-old Long Island, New York businessman who organized Tea Party protests, will be sworn in as the new Republican State Assemblyman representing Long Island's Eastern 3rd Assembly District after being certified the winner of a special election held Tuesday. The Tea Party followers can boast about their first elected official. Isn't that interesting? It's a small office, but he defeated his Democratic opponent, 28-year-old Lauren Thodden, 51-49%, making him what is believed to be the first Tea Party organizer who has attained public office. More importantly, his district has been in Democratic hands for the last 13 years, and he's only the third Republican to hold this seat in the last 37 years. Yeah. I'm thrilled, Murray told Fox News after a week-long recount in the close race. The phone's been ringing off the hook, and the emails are coming in like crazy. Small race, but he's been active with the Tea Party movement since last year. So it shows it pays off. Incidentally, Mr. Murray is the publisher of Free Supermarket Publications, you see. So he's actually provided a service and a product that the people want. He also founded the Fugitive Finder, a giveaway that features the photos and rap sheets of locally wanted criminals. He said he hopes, by the way, he has one son, Tony, who is now serving in Afghanistan. He is a staff sergeant with the Air National Guard, working as a crew chief for the A-10 Warhawk. You see, the guy is a great guy. This is exactly what we need in Washington, D.C., not community organizers, not grifters from K Street, not con men from cheeseburger outlets, not people who left stains on purple dresses, not people who did Purple Rain. No, we don't need them. We need guys like this, crew chiefs on A-10 Warhogs who know how to fix things, make things, sell things, and produce wonderful sons. And that's what we're getting from the grassroots. It's exactly what the left has been calling for their entire life in this country. Grassroots organization. Prairie fire, they used to say. Prairie fire. We got to light a prairie fire, the left kept screaming. We need grassroots organizations. And look what's going on. There has been a prairie fire lit, but it's not coming from the left. It's coming from the center and from the right. And there has been a revolution, a counter-revolution. And you're involved in it, folks, whether you believe it or know it or not. You are involved in the greatest revolution and counter-revolution I have seen in my lifetime, and you're living through history.
Savage.
privatize with your pen. And keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin. And there's no telling who that it's naming. For the loser now will be later to win. For the times, they are a-changing.
It is a savage nation, and I've been through at least one revolution of this wheel. I lived through the 60s. Now I'm living through the whatever, the 10s or the O's. We've gone through quite a change in this country from one, I wouldn't say one extreme to the other, but we're certainly going to an extreme right now under this administration, surrounded as we are by almost triangulated by Marxists in the government. Again, you say you're being extremist here. I say, no, I'm being very reasonable here. By their own admission, they're Marxists. How do you explain a president appointing so-called czars whose writings and speeches all refer to Marxist revolutionaries, other than to say that they're Marxists, for talks like one, etc.? So therefore, why should I not be alarmed? Unless you want to live in a Marxist utopia, don't count me in, please, because I've seen where Marxist utopias have led. I am actually quite aware of it. My grandfather fled the Soviet Union after the Bolshevik Revolution, and I studied it ever since I was an undergraduate at Queens College in New York City, which at that time, as I say, was flooded with Europeans who fled tyranny and came in and taught communistic philosophy in so many departments. It was a hotbed of socialist communists, Queens College in the 50s, which was astounding to me that they would flee tyranny and introduce tyranny into America. But over the years, I learned what was what and who was who and how it worked. And so we're sitting here watching the wheel go around again. And now the people have spoken, whether it was in Virginia or New Jersey or more particularly in Massachusetts. And now in this little assembly seat in Long Island, the Democrats are being driven out of office. They're being driven out of office by regular people, business people who see the middle class being attacked by Obama, not to give to the poor, which would be bad enough. He's not robbing for the rich to give to the poor. As I say, he's robbing from the middle to give to the rich. Write it down. I said it first. It'll be picked up tomorrow by various and sundry in the media, but I'm Lao Tzu of the radio, so it doesn't matter to me. And so therefore, I want to talk about all these topics and others. Sometimes it can be mirthful on this show. Sometimes it can be insightful on the show. Sometimes it can be just strictly business, which is what we've been doing today on the Savage Nation. I'm now almost obsessed with the topic of the Marxists in the White House. I'm almost obsessed with it. Now, remember, I got to go back again. When others in the media who are now experts on Karl Marx didn't know who Karl Marx was, they thought he was one of the Marx brothers. I was talking about this 10 years ago, which is good. Which is good. I don't own it. I'm not a scholar on this. I'm not the world's leading expert on this, but I certainly know what it leads to. The Marxist utopias that have been tried have all led to mass murders. Every one of the states that have tried a Marxist revolution has led to mass murder of the middle class. You take the Soviet Union, you know what happened there, the slave labor camps. Did you read any of this? Did you ever read Pasternak's Dr. Zhivago? Did you miss any of this stuff? Did you at least see the movie of what goes on after the Marxist revolution occurs, the people's revolution, what happens to people who speak up to the government? Have you seen what Big Sis did to them in the ex-Soviet Union? You don't know that there was a Big Sis then who was not constrained by any controls whatsoever. You let Big Sis loose, my friends, without constraints. You'll have slave labor camps in this country. Now, you go to Cambodia. I have to tell that story repeatedly till you finally understand what Marxism can do to people. Again, Cambodia was run by a rather mild-mannered man named Pol Pot, a college professor. I don't know whether he was a community organizer, but Pol Pot was a mild-mannered college professor. He went to Paris, and he studied Marx's dialectic, and he thought it made sense. He studied what Marx wrote, and hey, that makes sense, because Cambodia, you know, is not a fair society, and blah, blah, blah. And so I'm going to bring back the stuff I learned, and I'm going to impose the dialectical and materialist concept of history upon Cambodia. And I'm going to change the idea of social change. I'm now going to become an atheist. I have an atheistic view of human liberation, which I derive from the work of Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels. And I'm going to be a good Marxist because I want fairness. and I'm going to change class relations. I am going to change all of the legal, political, ideological, and other aspects of my society in Cambodia. And I am going to make a perfect utopia. And you know where that utopia led, don't you? You remember the movie of the 1980s, The Mountain of Skulls, that evolved? 3 million Cambodians in a small country. Mainly people with eyeglasses were attacked by 14, 13-year-old children who were given AK-47s and red scarves. They were known as the Khmer Rouge, based, meaning the red scarves, which were based upon the reds of China, which were based upon the reds of the Soviet Union, always the red. The Khmer Rouge, they wore the red scarves, and they were told to go out and find anyone who wore eyeglasses. And those who wore eyeglasses were said to be the enemies of the revolution, the ideal revolution. They were holding it back. And so they rounded them up, and they enslaved them, they worked them, and they tortured them, and they killed them. Teachers, doctors, lawyers, engineers, police, you name it. Now, I have a friend who actually fought in Vietnam as a very, very heroic man, won many medals. He was in the special forces, and he told me what he found when he landed with his parachute brigade in Hue right at the beginning of the battle. And I see he heard this story once before, and he actually wrote an article very similar to it. It shook him up because when he landed in Hue and they were engaging in the battle for Hue, that ancient city in Vietnam, he said they were walking along when one of the men in his platoon noticed what he thought was a branch sticking out from the ground. And he tried to kick it in the mud while holding on to his rifle. And he found that it wasn't a branch, it was a human hand. And then they dug into the trench, and it was a trench, a grave. It was a grave. And they found out that the communists, you know, the friends of the people, had rounded up all the police chiefs, the police, the teachers, the doctors, the lawyers, the architects, the engineers, and they shot them all and their children and threw them into a mass grave in Hue. This shook my friend up very deeply. So he understands what communism is and what communists are. Don't assume for a minute that they care about the poor. Don't assume for a minute that they care about fairness. For God's sakes, have you not even read Animal Farm? That fable of what the communist promises and what the communist actually delivers? So today has been a long, long day's journey into night for me thus far, and I'm a little tired, so I'm going to back off because I've got a lot more to go. I got a long journey ahead of me over the next few months to get this message out to enough Americans before October 2010 so that they know what to do. They already know what to do, most of them. On the grassroots level, the prairie fire has been lit. As I told you, the assemblyman just won in Long Island. I don't have to tell you what to do. Those of you listen to me, but you've got to go out from where you are and you've got to send the message out. You've got to spread the message out. And so very soon I'm going to set up a special box on my website. I'm going to organize through my website a method of you participating. No money, no contribution. I'm not looking for a dime. Not a dime. I'm going to help organize an awareness campaign across America right on my own website, michaelsavage.com. We have almost 1.8 million uniques a month now. It's phenomenal. It's one of the most important conservative websites in the United States of America right now, all because of you, all because of this wonderful radio show. And so we can be a force of social change for the better to save this country before it's too late. Is that extremist? Not if you're a realist, no. You say it can't happen here? You read Sinclair Lewis's It Can't Happen Here? It did happen here. It is happening here. It did happen here. It is happening here. Little by little, some of the most extremist czars have been exposed and thrown out, such as Anita Dunn and Van Jones, because primarily of people in the media. But don't ever forget what you may have learned in that little book written in the 1930s called It Can't Happen Here by Sinclair Lewis, where he predicted a right-wing revolution in America, not a left-wing revolution. But it was what he said about what would happen with a group of gangsters on the right is happening in America with a group of similar people on the left. And, you know, I don't want to start reading quotes, but there's one that I'm just searching through with my little, this is like a second Bible to me. And I don't know if I can put my hands on it. It's such a good little quote. It's worth waiting for. I can't find it. I'm sorry. It's a little late in the hour here. But anyway, Sinclair Lewis's It Can Happen Here is worth reading. It's about what happens when a small group of people who know that America's become fat and lazy can literally take over the entire shebang, the whole country. They almost did it. Nancy Pelosi was literally right out of It Can't Happen Here. Nancy Pelosi's arrogance was right out of It Can't Happen Here. Now, her flying around in military jets, this is a major league story. A major league story. It's right out of Animal Farm. The woman appropriates military aircraft for her family, her grandchildren, her daughter, her son-in-law. And no one says a word in Congress? And you think you're represented by a representative government? You think you're represented by a Republican Party that's going to save you? You're going to buy that Newt Gingrich garbage all over again? You're going to buy that crap from them again? Are you crazy? Are you people out of your damn minds? You think that those pigs are going to save you? You had 8 years of them. Look what they did to you. And who on the conservative side of the band and radio was there for you? Only me. Only me. Rush was a water carrier for the Republican Party. He still is. You mark my words. I know you may love him. I know he does a good job. I know he's a fabulous guy. I understand all of that, and I know I shouldn't criticize him. But let me tell you something. By his own admission, in the last year of Bush, he had to admit he was a water carrier for George Bush because he saw what was happening to his ratings. He saw what was happening. Okay? But make no mistake about it. As sure as I'm standing here, he's going to become a water carrier, as will Wallbanger again. In fact, Wallbanger's the lead speaker at the RNC. What does that tell you about them? They're going to lead you right back this way to the egress. P.T. Barnum, this way to the egress. Now, there was no egress. There was only nothing there. He, P.T. Barnum, who created Ringling Brothers Barnum & Bailey, wanted to get the people out of the circus after a certain act. He needed to get the next crowd of schmucks in there, and they wouldn't leave. They wanted to eat peanuts and look to stand around, and they pay. He didn't know how to get them out. So he set up an exhibit down a long hall, this way to the egress. And the average schmuck didn't know what an egress was. Oh, let me go see the egress. I'll go. This way to the egress. Step right up. Egress down here. And he got them marching to the egress. There was no egress. It was an exit. But he had to create something to make them go out of the tent in order to sell the next crowd. To me, many of these guys who wrap themselves in pseudo, named it the other day. You heard of pseudo-intellectuals. These are pseudo-rednecks on the radio. Pseudo-rednecks. They're pseudo-rednecks. They're acting like they're you and the average guy out there. Yeah, a Gulfstream jet. Yeah, this is a guy. Yeah, all right. Sure. Pseudo-redneck. Right. Oh, I'm just an okie pimpinokey. I'm just like you, buddy. Hey, man, yeah, you're a good American. You're a great American. I'm just like you, buddy. I'm just like you, buddy. I'm just an Okie from Finoki. I'm with you, buddy. I'm with you, buddy. I feel your pain. I'm with you, buddy. I'm with you, buddy. I'm with you.
A place where even squares can have a
right.
Ball.
That's it. Good old Rush. Good old Wallbanger.
Down at the courthouse.
So be careful about the Republicans that are coming back into the picture again, like they're going to save you. Be very, very careful indeed, because you had 8 years of the bums, and you threw them out. Many of you, by the way, I'm people saying, I'll vote for anyone but McCain. We don't want more of the same. We're getting rid of him. I remember that. I said, don't. Be careful. Even he, would be better. They said, well, no, Obama will be so bad that the people will wake up to what the Democrats are forever. Well, it's only 1 year into Barry's administration. He's got a long way to go. And if you underestimate these people, you're doing so at your own risk. I respect them enormously. I think that Rahm Emanuel and Axelrod are some of the smartest people in the history of Washington. And if you think that they don't know what's going on, you're mistaken. They're just changing their tune. And they're going to triangulate you with throwing you bones, moving to the center. But they're still focused, hard focused on their goals. And by the way, Emmanuel's goals are much different than that of Axelrod. I got to explain that to you. This needs to be discussed by a political scientist, not by a mere talk show host that doesn't really know anything. See, we don't know anything in radio. We just get up here and entertain you with hokey stories and such about dogs, and we don't really know anything. The real smart people work for ABC, CBS, NBC, and CNN. Guys like I don't really know anything. But we try our best. We have a limited capacity, so we work our best at it. But someone should write an essay on how Rahm Emanuel's politics are much different than that of David Axelrod. Oh, that'd be a heck of a little story right in there. Like Rahm Emanuel, Rahm Emanuel is from the school of realpolitik. I don't think he has an ideological axe to grind. Yes, he's on the left, but he's not ideologically a far leftist. I don't think he cares about that. He cares only about raw power. On the other hand, Mr. Axelrod from New York, Oh, my goodness, what a difference there is there. Oh, what a difference a day makes. Can you play What a Difference a Day Makes while we all ponder that for a moment? Because there's so much to talk about here that only someone in the field of political science could do that. So let's take the calls. New York City, WOR. Go ahead, please. You're on the air, Michael. What's on your mind?
You already know that some of the most vigorous patriots are from former Soviet Union countries. And my grandfather also escaped Russia, and my mother got here when she was five, and her aunt tried to turn her into a communist. So my whole life I've been developing as an anti-communist. That's number one. Number two, I see you as the coach of the United States, and you remind me of Abraham Lincoln, except you're not going to be a martyr. You are going to lead us, and I don't call this a revolution. I have, with all due respect to your creative genius, I have a word which I think you'll like. I call it, we are revolutionaries.
Very interesting. I never heard the term. Revolutionaries is very interesting.
Now, I was in a film, this is the 20th anniversary, it was a Russian documentary called Tak Jitnelta, or No Way to Live. And I can't get it.
Michael, can you hold on? I want to hear everything you have to say, but right now we have the wonderful people who bring you this show. We're going to come right back to you on WOR right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
How many of us listening to this show even know that 15,000 American troops are engaged in a fight for their lives in Afghanistan as we speak? Do you think, I mean, do we really know this? Why is this obliterated by the media? Well, you know, we'll go back to Michael in New York in a minute. Why is this obliterated from the media? By the media, rather. Remember when Bush, when any gun was fired in Iraq? Ooh, they fired a gun, a massacre. Ooh, evil Republican Bush fired a gun in Iraq. Ooh. They couldn't stop howling. But you see, it was Obama who ordered the additional troops to Afghanistan. And as commander-in-chief, he has given the permission for the general, McChrystal, to go ahead with the 15,000 men and engage. Engage with the enemy. And they're doing it. And they're not, you know, it's not so easy. They're suddenly winning either. But why is the media not reporting it? Because if they reported it, people would say, wait a minute. Obama came to power as an anti-war president. Look at this. We're in a bigger war now in Afghanistan. So you see how the government media complex is no different than Pravda was in the Soviet Union. Michael in New York, welcome back. Fire away. We only have a minute or so.
Okay. The name of the film, Ridiculed Russian Leadership, is called No Way to Live, Tak Jitnelta. But I wanted to give you a prediction. I predict that the way for Obama to try to rescue his presidency is to catch or kill Osama bin Laden. But I also predict that...
Absolutely.
But I also predict that the mushroom of the revolutionaries to restore America to its greatness will have him carted out of the White House in handcuffs. That's my prediction.
You actually think he's going to be arrested?
I absolutely do. Nothing is more powerful than an idea whose time has come. And you know how corrupt Chicago is, stemming from him. And we.
Well, wait a minute. Hold on. There is a procedure known as impeachment that does not include handcuffs. And you have to be guilty of a crime or a misdemeanor. High crimes and misdemeanors. As you well know, they're very hard to prove in a den of thieves. You think a den of thieves are going to accuse the guy at the top of the chain of being a thief?
You remove a guy from office with impeachment, but you could lock him up. A cop on the beat has more power than...
Let's pause right here. I don't think that's going to happen. I think something else is going to happen. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now,
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I talked today about, you know, the poor feeding off the poor. What is that? Well, it's a big story in a way. And you know, because Obama is a man who is portrayed by the liberal media as a Robin Hood, who is supposedly robbing from the rich to give to the poor. But as anyone in this country who has lost their house or their car or their job will tell you, Obama is robbing from the middle to give to the rich. There's almost no money going down to the poor. It's all going up to the banks and the cronies who put Obama in office. And that is why I say the poor feed off the poor right now. Today, for example, I bicycled down to the mall, and there was a farmer's market. And once again, there were the libs eating for free from the poorest of the poor who were trying to make a living selling their fruits, their homegrown vegetables, their little garden vegetables, their home-cooked pastries. It was touching. And there were the little piggies with the Obama stickers on their foreheads. I could read it with invisible ink. There were the Obama piggies, the voters rather, going from stand to stand at the farmer's market, sampling like insects for free, pretending that they would buy. Ooh, well, let me try one of those cookies. Very good, Martha. You should try one. I tried to look the other way. I tried not to engage, but I couldn't. Unfortunately, I lost control of myself. Why? Well, there was this big, fat slob woman in her late 70s. Obviously, I mean, she was like a Coney Island Brooklyn woman, eating as many, like, tofu meatballs as she could stick in a fat craw, you know, one toothpick full after the other. So I said to the owner while she was gobbling for her to hear, "Do you sell anything, or do you have only these people eating for nothing?" Fatso ignored me. The owner said, "What? Oh, you've got to give samples in order for them to buy." I said, "Do any of them buy, or do they just eat for free?" So Fatso stopped eating like a big insect, dropped the meatball out of her big craw, and she says, "Ah, he must be from New York," with the New York thing. I said, "Wherever I'm from, I pay for my food, unlike you." And on she went. She opened up her mouth and a half a meatball, a tofu meatball, fell out of it onto her huge bosoms. And I walked away saying, why do I get involved? Well, all I know is that the poor feed off the poor. And we talked about that. We also talked about the differences between Marxism, Leninism, and Trotskyism. And we asked ourselves, is Obama a Marxist, a Leninist, or a Trotskyite? You say, well, wait a minute. Why are you giving me three choices? How about one more? Okay, is Obama a Marxist, a Leninist, a Trotskyite? None of the above? All of the above? Or is he just a capitalist? Well, you'll have to decide, you know, after you listen to this show in the next few days of what's going on in the world of Obama and what he's doing to the society. You'll just have to decide for yourself. Regular listeners to the Savage Nation know that liberals want to steal your nation. Well, there are thieves out there who want to steal your identity, too. But one of my great advertisers, LifeLock, can stop them. Give them a call at 1-800-622-9172. LifeLock, 1-800-622-9172. Well, let's do this. Let's go to michaelsavage.com and read from the top down. Savage now on Extra Sports 860 in San Francisco. That's important to me because I overcame a blockade like you can't believe. And I beat the system. Great station. Thank you. From this story is going to blow your mind. Don't test Muslims for explosives, says the ACLU to the DHS. Did you hear this? They said, oh, yes, that's a good idea to test people for explosives on their palms. But don't single out any particular group, and they name Muslims and Arabs to not be singled out. Instead, look for young 4-year-old boys who wear leg braces who can't walk and 80-year-old war veterans. Those might be your terrorists. Obama's census counts illegal aliens. Taliban's top military commander was captured yesterday. The Pakistan, we found out today, has known the whereabouts of Taliban number 2 for a long time. Was he running a vegetable stand in Brooklyn? I don't know. The Taliban are using civilians as human shields. There's nothing new about that. Van Jones, the disgraced Marx's czar thrown out by Obama when he was found out, is going to appear on a panel alongside Senator Gillibrand from New York. Can you believe this idiot? A new poll says Boxer is very vulnerable to defeat. She cannot break the 50% mark against any potential Republican opponents. Huh. Go, girl, go. Unable to secure jobs, freed inmates return to jail. A growing number of states are pushing inmates out of prison and early release programs to reduce overcrowding, but they want to get back, so they're breaking windows. Huh. And you thought they were in jail because they didn't want to be there. I watched more of the Westminster Dog Show with my little toy poodle Teddy last night, and they introduced the working dogs.
May we have the working group in the ring, please?
Oh, here they come, brawny, strong. Just a list of them, a laundry list of great things about this group.
The lunch bucket dogs.
They're making me hungry.
Most of them are big and powerful. Most of them are bred to be working dogs, whether it's pull a cart or a sled or guard the homes, police and military dogs, guide dogs, hunting dogs, rescue dogs like the St. Bernard there, the Newfoundland.
Well, sounds like the hardworking people of America. Of course, PETA was there with a protest.
A PETA-inspired protest moments before Sadie took the title was not broadcast to viewers at home. But it drew gasps from the crowd and lasted about a minute when two women entered the ring and held up signs that read, "Mutts rule and breeders kill shelter dog chances," before they were ushered out by security.
Why don't they find something useful to do with their time, like protesting the Chinese abuse of bears? Anyway, the main topic of discussion was Dr. John C. Drew, an early friend of Obama's, who's exposed Obama's Marxist roots for the world to see.
Well, my most vivid memory is how insistent he was in arguing a Marxist-Leninist point of view. He made a very principled, dedicated, impassioned argument that, in fact, a real revolution was coming, and that, in a sense, we should all get on board and prepare ourselves physically and emotionally for that revolution. He definitely saw America as the enemy. He believed that the ruling elite had rigged our economic system so that it caused people to be poor. And it was immoral and it was wrong. And the only way you could tip things back so that we all could enjoy a more prosperous lifestyle was to redistribute the wealth.
Look, I didn't know it was this bad. I suspected it. And they used the Soviet Union as their model society.
There was a sense that the Soviet Union was a more advanced society, and even though it had made mistakes under Stalin, there was still greater equality over there, and it was a better model for us than what we saw with our existing U.S. government. I'd go to my grave saying that he was arguing Marxist-Leninism.
Oh, no, I believe that.
The reason I think he's a Marxist is because I saw it with my own eyes. And I think he needs to explain to the American people what were the logical steps he took to get out of that Marxist socialist perspective.
Now, I told you Obama has been a naked Marxist. This may be the proof. Now, I agree that people do things in their youth and they change. But has he changed?
Savage.
You know, our trade policy is a big part of our economic problem. Believe me. A while back, Commerce Secretary Gary Locke announced details of Obama's National Export Initiative. What? Joining us today from the Heritage Foundation is Daniela Markim to take a closer look. Daniela, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Well, thank you so much for having me on the show, Michael. With the President's State of the Union address and then with Commerce Secretary Gary Locke giving a speech on President Obama's new National Export Initiative, we get a real flavor, at least for what some elements of a U.S. trade policy might finally start to look like. Really, the basic pillars of the National Export Initiative is to essentially create a business or a government cabinet that will oversee the expansion of government programs and special financing for firms and farmers that are looking for overseas market opportunities, and much tougher enforcement of international trade laws. Now, again, while it was welcome that we finally got some substantive comments on where trade should start to go for the United States, it really didn't cover the gamut of issues that we were really hoping to hear about. first and foremost, I think, is that trade isn't just about exports. Export promotion and trade enforcement are only parts of what America needs to do for a winning, comprehensive trade policy. And those parts need to be implemented in a way that actually truly advances America's success in global markets. You know, when push comes to shove, as much as we may want to have expanded access to other countries' markets, we in turn have to be willing to lower trade barriers to our own markets. If we also insist that other countries need to play fair by trade rules, we need to make sure that we, too, engage countries in global markets fairly. And finally, when we think about government export promotion activities, we have to look at that with a little bit of a cautious eye because, of course, government activities often will crowd out private market initiatives that would serve much better, at least in a longer-term, more sustainable way, to expand U.S. trade for all takers, not just those that can get the government's attention. So really, instead of just an export and enforcement strategy, we actually need this strategy that addresses all trade.
Why do you say that?
For America to excel and be competitive in the world marketplace, we have to make sure that U.S. trade policy is clear and consistent with the open market principles that America has for decades advanced in the international arena. And we need to make sure that we also dismantle some of the trade barriers that we've had on the books for a long time or that we've implemented since the onset of the economic downturn. And we also need to make sure that we engage other nations, whether it's in bilateral fora or in the WTO, the World Trade Organization, with a recognition that it's not just about opening markets abroad. We need to open our own markets as well if we're really going to get the biggest boost from trade. The importance of imports. We worry about imports. People think about imports. They think about the deficit. They think about lost jobs. But in fact, foreign competition, just like competition that occurs when firms are able to engage each other fairly and freely here at home, is actually very beneficial and gives us the biggest bang for the buck that trade can really bring to an economy. When we have additional competition from foreign producers, that really spurs productivity and innovation in the U.S. market. It enables us to better specialize and compete in goods that we have a real advantage in. And it allows us then to not only expand more, export more, but it improves our own living standards and it raises incomes here, raises the potential for job promotion. And because our incomes are rising, we're able to buy more of all goods, both domestic and foreign as well. But really, that impetus from imports means investment and productivity, and that's where long-term economic growth and the potential for new jobs really comes from. In order to make sure that we not just worry about the exports, but that we also think about our own reforms that we can engage in here at home to really boost the potential from trade, we need to look at things that have been sort of long pending on the U.S. trade agenda and have needed some sort of attention for a while now.
Well, like what?
Probably first and foremost among those is talking about voting on pending free trade agreements with Colombia, Panama, and South Korea. These agreements have been hanging out on the shelf for a very long time. They're solid agreements. They would give U.S. exporters tremendous market access, especially for South Korea. But at the same time, it would also help us lower our own trade barriers, boosting investment here at home, and again, creating the potential for new job growth. The great thing, too, about the free trade agreements with both Colombia and Panama is that when we engage in freer trade, open our markets with a developing country, and developing countries open up theirs with ours, we're able to help them grow and prosper from trade just as we do. And again, as incomes are rising then in these developing countries, and they actually begin to develop, they'll be able to buy more of all goods, not only goods they make themselves, but also goods that come from other nations, to include the United States. That's the long-term growth potential, then, of opening one's markets. And finally, it's important, again, to really focus on some of our own trade practices that aren't necessarily very good for the economy, certainly not in the long run, and certainly not for creating the potential for job growth.
Mm-hmm.
We've adopted a number of protectionist measures, especially since the economic downturn, that have not been helpful in terms of maintaining an open global trade environment. First off to mind, of course, comes the more stringent Buy American provisions in the stimulus plan that was passed last year. And, of course, some of the subsidies that we've introduced, whether it's in the auto industry or banking and financial industry, that have really led to an expansion in government participation in sectors that need to be much more competitive instead if they're going to be able to have be competitive in a sustainable way in international markets. The fundamental problem, too, with a lot of these measures, Buy American, they sound great, they sound patriotic. In fact, they don't help because while they may protect a handful of jobs, they put a lot of other jobs at risk.
Well, how does that work?
The United States leads on trade largely by example. And for again, for many decades, that example has been as an advocate and proponent of freer trade, not protectionism. If the United States were to instead retract from that or move back from that position and become much more protectionist, that would signal to other countries that they can do the same types of things. The other thing, of course, is that if we become more confrontational, either as a consequence of adding these new trade barriers or becoming very aggressive in trade enforcement, that too will sour our trade relationships both with traditional trade partners or with potential new ones and make it that much harder to be able to sell our products there and obtain the benefits from trade.
Hmm.
So again, if America wants to be a credible partner, a credible voice in shaping how globalization evolves in the future, we need to engage on all fronts, recognize that the United States not only should pursue the laudable goal of opening foreign markets more, but also has work here at home, and to make sure, too, that any of the types of trade enforcement activities or government programs designed to promote exports don't crowd out the market or don't so completely undermine our credibility in talking with our trade partners that we no longer have a voice for shaping the way trade looks down the road.
Thanks for the report, Daniela.
Thank you again so much for having me on.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
I want to change gears right now and play a great interview I had with James Elroy, author of Bloods Are Over. Please sit back and enjoy a literary excursion on the Savage Nation.
The story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Right, and this is Michael Savage, and we're going to shift gears right now from the political machinations of our dear leaders to fiction. We're going to speak with one of America's greatest writers. He wrote L.A. Confidential. Many of you know the movie, if you haven't read the book, The Black Dahlia, The Big Nowhere. Phenomenal books. James Elroy, welcome back to the Savage Nation. Haven't heard from you in 10 years. How are you, James?
Savage, what's shaking, baby?
I don't know. I know it's shaking, and I'll tell you, there's a whole lot of shaking going on. So you have this incredible book that I have in my hand, Bloods a Rover, a novel. It's summer of 1968. King and Kennedy are dead. The conspiracies have begun to unravel, and a dirty trick squad is getting ready to deploy at the Democratic Convention in Chicago. What is your book about, James Elroy?
Savage, it goes from the summer of 68 up to the death of gay Edgar Hoover in May of 72. You got the FBI, you got crazy black militants in L.A., two fictional groups, the Black Tribe Alliance and the Mau Mau Liberation Front. You got crazy juju in the Dominican Republic. You've got it all.
It says that the life. I like the piece that goes with it. Says James Elroy's novel, The Lives Collide in Pursuit of the Red God, Goddess Joan, and each of them will pay a dear and savage price to live history. It says other hallmarks of James Elroy's works include dense plotting and a relentlessly pessimistic, albeit moral, worldview. You and I share that, a relentlessly pessimistic, albeit moral, worldview, James. I hate to drag you into the political sphere, but I know that you have said things that are worth repeating. You say America has to rule the world or someone worse than us will. Boy, do I agree with that one.
Yeah, it's quite true, and all American presidents come to grips with that. Some of them quite nobly, like Ronald Reagan, others, yeah, let's not mention names, less so.
And then you say, wait, James, and then you say, a capitalist economy has to prevail because massive social programs tend not to work. So apparently you don't have too many friends in West Hollywood. Apparently you don't have too many friends in West Hollywood.
I don't have many friends in West Hollywood.
You see, James, I can still get a laugh out of you. You know, you were on my show when I was a local host here in San Francisco way back in the beginning. You've gone on to such phenomenal things. Your books are awesome in that they're telegraphic. To me, they remind me of, in a certain way, and don't take it as an offense, Kerouacian in that regard. You cut through the fog with some staccato-like sentences. And I love the texture of the book because it reminds me of the seaminess of L.A., which I happen to like. I'm one of the few people who enjoys there's a seamy side of L.A. that I like. I think you revel in that.
Play, come on vacation, go home on probation.
Listen to this. Electric chair. He couldn't shake the picture. S kept reminding him. He found that golf course bunker. La Banda left a black guy strapped in. His palms had melted on the electrodes. The restraints burnt him bone deep. That's good writing, James. I can pretty much say I know why you're very successful.
Yeah, you know, it's he was our puppet in the Dominican Republic, Joaquin Balaguer. And there were a couple of, you know, of quasi-leftist, quasi-centrist guys that came in. And then they brought in a guy everybody called the midget, Joaquin Balaguer. And he was our puppet in the Dominican Republic. And Nixon ran him. And nothing happened in the Dominican Republic during the 4 years I needed latitude for fictionalizing. So I had that much more latitude to fictionalize. And Haiti adjoins the Dominican Republic, and you want some crazy, you know what? Boy, oh yeah. Boy, man, oh man, a chef, let's go to Haiti.
Oh, really? It's that bad?
Yeah, oh yeah, Papa Doc Duvalier, the dictator there, he ruled with his secret police, the Tonton Macoute. You had voodoo. You had voodoo sects. You had herbs.
You know, James, you're very deeply into this whole, as I say, seedy L.A., and I'm not trying to castigate you in any way. Do you believe in voodoo's powers?
No.
No.
No, voodoo ain't for me. But it makes for damn good fiction.
Your book, Blood's a Rover, fundamentally, this novel, is about, I mean, can you define it, what it's about?
4 years of American history. It's about the war of ideals. It's about that. And, you know, you're a few years older than me. We're about the same age. And you remember that time. Everybody was bombed out of their gourds.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. There was.
And you say, look, a dirty trick squad is getting ready to deploy the Democratic Convention. Black militants are warring in Southside L.A. The feds are concocting draconian countermeasures. And fate has placed three men at the vortex of history. And the three men are who?
Dwight Hawley, strong-arm goon for J. Edgar Hoover. Don Crutchfield, who is a real-life friend of mine, very famous Hollywood private eye. And Wayne Tedrow Jr., who's a holdover from the previous novel. And ex-Vegas cop with some very, very heavy baggage. Mm. And when I was a kid growing up, I was too bombed to recall the history that was going on all around me. But I sensed that there was always a guy with a briefcase that had a silencer pistol inside of it. And he was a secret implementer of history.
So oh, my God.
Blood the Rover, my new novel, tells history through the perspective of these three guys.
Oh, my God. Do you believe the government still whacks people, James?
I don't think it's done that in quite a while. I think plots to whack Castro boomeranged and got JFK whacked.
This new book is a stunner. It's called Bloods Are Over by James Ellroy. Let me read you a paragraph. It says, Los Angeles, 12/27/1968. One paragraph. The Bureau kept a suite at the downtown Statler. Karen's baby was just born four blocks away. Joan wore a red dress. Dwight wore his most fed gray suit. Christmas lights blinked on Wilshire. The prior tenant left a bottle of Ten High. Joan saw Dwight's ratcheted hands and dosed them with bourbon on a washcloth. It stung. Dwight held tears back. He thought of Thomas F. Narduno and wondered what Joan knew about everything. Joan said, save your hands. You're 52 years old. How do you know that? I'm not telling you. What do you want from all this? Tell me what all this means. That's good writing, James. You should consider a career in literature.
I guess I better write.
Yeah, but what do you mean by blood's a rover?
It's a quote from A.E. Hausman, Clay Life.
Oh, my God, you're kidding me. To an athlete dying young.
Yes, don't even get me going. I'll recite the whole poem. But
wait, James, am I the only person in the American media who knows who A.E. Hausman is?
Yes, you and me. The day
it was my favorite. It was my favorite poem for years and years and years. You know, James, I should have read that right after the Fort Hood massacre. That's what I should have read.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't want to get distracted with politics, but your book is somewhat political, is it not?
It is. It is a big tale of the dream state of America between 68 and 72.
So that was a fulcrum. It's one of the reasons we're in such trouble now. Do you think we survived the 60s, James? Did we actually survive the 60s?
Yeah, we've survived the 60s. And America is going to survive, and America is going to be just fine.
Even with the current group of college teachers running the world?
I think we're here to stay. Call me. It's a vibe I've had. It's a vibe. I've gone into the hole, Savage, let me tell you. I commune with God with a very few people. I don't read. I don't listen to the radio. I don't go to movies. I don't watch television. I'm not on the internet, and I don't have a cell phone.
Mm.
So I'm not the best guy on earth to talk contemporary politics with, but I got a vibe. And here's the vibe.
Right, of course. You have your own tuning fork, and your tuning fork says we shall survive.
We will prevail.
I, Michael Savage, will be right back.
Savage.
Here are some of the other stories that you can get from michaelsavage.com. It's unbelievable stuff. From Breitbart TV, it's on my site. A college acquaintance of Obama's, who was a Marxist himself, says that when he was in college, Obama was a pure Marxist socialist. Now, for all of you out there who think that Obama's going to move to the center, think again. I've told you again and again that Obama is a naked Marxist, and this proves it. You see, the people who have known him for years are now coming out of the woodwork to say that he's a hardened socialist, and he has been for most of his life. I've been playing the clips from this interview with someone who knew him in 1980, and you'll hear more of it in this hour. Also on Michael Savage from ABC News, Obama's census counts illegal aliens. Did you know that? Like I've said to you before, the Republicans want the illegals for the cheap labor, and the Democrats want the illegals for the votes. Where are our elected officials on these things that are a definite threat to our nation and that are being done out in the open? Nowhere. There's all cash. There's nowhere. The GOP will debut 10 promises. Oh, my God. Here we go again. Remember that one with Newt Gingrich? What was that for America, the 10-point that he came up with?
Newt? Oh, the contract for America.
Contract for America. The GOP is going to introduce the contract on America. McCain said Republicans would craft a list of 10 legislative pledges which they would seek to enact within the first 60 days of taking back control of Congress. McCain should not be involved in this for obvious reasons. He lost. Oh, God, they should put Brown in charge of it. But they're putting the old loser warhorse in charge of the GOP leadership. You know, it's time McCain opened that Buick dealership in Tibet. The only reason we're seeing any life in the old boy now is because he has another Republican to fight. He's really something. You know, John and Cindy, you're nice people, and we all love you. But you know, there are some nice temples up there in Lhasa. The yak milk might do wonders for your health. It's a great place to take your daughter, because she can't be interviewed by ABC, CBS, or CNN.
The elevation is supposed to be good for the health, too.
White House defends year-old stimulus. It's on Michael Savage from the AP. President Barack Obama defending his economic stimulus plan on his first anniversary was dispatching his cabinet across the country to try to calm an anxious public as demon cats head into potentially devastating congressional elections in November. Well, okay. Yeah, right. You really believe the stimulus has trickled down to you? Well, false results, imaginary zip codes, jobs that don't exist, only about a third of the money spent so far. The stimulus, which was supposed to be so urgent, is a bust like everything else originating with this trial administration. Now Biden and the others are going forth to make ever greater fables. And if the stimulus worked so well, why did unemployment go up? Can't figure that one out. Anyway, we could talk about anything you want here. Virginia, here we go. She wants to talk about San Francisco. Michelle, welcome. You're on the Savage Nation. Now, what are you calling about, Michelle?
My two favorite things in the world are sports and Dr. Savage.
You know how many people have told me that they're not mutually exclusive? I really didn't know that. Remember I used to ridicule people with their hats on backwards?
Yes, I sure do. And their pants.
The only people who look good in baseball hats, you know who they are?
Who's that?
Sexy women with ponytails sticking out of the back of a baseball hat.
Okay. It doesn't appeal to me, but, you know.
I mean, the baseball has to be one of the hardest things to make a person look good in. So, Michelle, what station are you listening on in Virginia?
WTNT AM.
Oh, you're out of Washington, D.C., the home of Obama and his minions.
Yes. I tell you, it's really tough living here in this day and age.
Run into any one of the several hundred personal servants that Michelle Obama has? I know she's into green things, Michelle, and growing vegetables in the backyard of the White House. Are you aware she has more personal assistants in attendance than any first lady in history? Are you aware of that?
That's what I'd heard, and, you know, on top of it, the
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Not reported in USA Away, no, or any other than newspapers that nobody reads. She has more assistants than any first lady in history. I wonder why. Thank you for the call, darling. Eureka, California. Kim, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Mike. How you doing? I've learned a lot from you. I'm a first-time caller. I credit you for teaching me one thing, a lot of things, but one thing is I give now to charities that I really believe in, and you taught me that.
That's right. You know, that's the important thing is I found a few that I trust that I give money to, and believe me, in most of my life I didn't have an extra penny to give anybody. But if I have an extra few bucks, I give it to these groups that I list on my website and some I don't even list.
Well, like you, I live with a large dose of common sense, and I give to what I believe in.
That's right. And you always look into the one thing to look in when you're giving money. I'll tell you about it. Charities. When you look at a nonprofit, find out what percent of the money goes to programs and what percent of the money goes to overhead. And if it's not 90% going to programs, don't give them a dime.
Yeah. How do you research
well, that? If they're a nonprofit, if it's a 501c3 nonprofit corporation, then they have to file tax returns, which you can access. Before you give them a penny, ask them to see their tax returns. And if they don't give them to you, then don't give them any money. And ask them how the money is spent. What percent goes? Let's say I'm giving to a group that says we're going to save elephants. So I ask them, well, what percent of $100,000 or $100 goes to save the elephants, and what percent goes for administration costs? You know what I'm saying?
Once again, I'm learning a little more from you.
Right, right. That's the most important thing about nonprofits. That's what you got to ask them. Sacramento, Gregory, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Dr. Savage.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, just wanted to say a little bit like the other caller said. I've been listening to you for quite a while now, back in, I guess, 96 or 97, right after my father passed. And it was quite a blessing to find you. You've been
That's nice. No, I substitute for the uncles and the fathers that are gone. I know that.
Well, you're kind of like my group guru with all the wisdom and a thing you just touched on about seeing God in nature. And I remember a thing you said the other day on the chimpanzees. It just knocked me to the when you said how a man has to live by what dictates his soul. And it just,
yes.
Almost
right.
Tears.
Well, what do you mean when I was saying a medical research on chimpanzees?
Yeah, but you were just explaining yourself, and it just, you know, you were explaining your why you have the views that you do, kind of.
Oh, in other words, why I took that upon myself to make that an issue on ending lab testing on chimpanzees.
Walked out on Jaws because you were, it hit you where it shouldn't hit you.
Yeah, well, right. Everyone has their own little things in life that move them. So what motivates you to call today, Gregory?
Well, just all the above, and just wanted to thank you for being your modern-day Moses, Dr. Savage. And
well, I wouldn't put myself in that category for two reasons. One, I don't stutter. And B, I've not let anybody through the Reds. I haven't made the C part yet.
You're leading us through a storm right now, so...
Well, okay, I can see that. We are living through a storm, and Obama is sort of a pharaoh. He has a pharaonic figure. There's no question about it. If actually you look at him and how he looks, he's somewhat of a pharaonic figure, and he is sort of a mini pharaoh at this point.
Okay,
there is there's a great biblical parallel here. There's no question about it.
I can't believe I came up with that, but that was more of your interpretation of it. See, that's what makes you the good seer that you are, sir.
All right, I'm the good shepherd today, Gregory. Thank you for being such a loyal listener. It's listeners like you that make me get up in the morning. The Savage Nation, broadcasting from San Francisco to the world. One man's opinion is what it is.
Savage.